was even smaller than the door itself, like an entrance made for children. The upper edge hung a foot lower than the top of the door frame, and the bottom edge rose a foot from the floor. In stark contrast to the shiny wallpaper and glossy wainscoting on the outside of the door, rotted, wormy wood surrounded the opening on three sides, and the mortar below the warped threshold had cracked and fallen away, revealing pitted craters of filthy plaster. Black streaks of tar ran down the plaster like melted wax. The opening reminded Julia of abandoned houses or hiding places for Jews in black and white World War II photos. She shivered. Had the hidden door been there the entire time she was growing up? Maybe there really was someone living behind the walls. Weak light from the outer room fell across the grimy landing of the opening in what looked like a bottom step. She picked up the flashlight, turned it on, and shone it into the door. Her light revealed a cramped, narrow stairwell with worn wooden steps and a tangle of electrical wires running along the edge of the slanted ceiling like a black snake. Chunks of yellowed wallpaper hung from the stairwell like flaps of dried skin, revealing broken patches of lath and plaster. It looked like a tight fit, and the space above the steps remained hidden in darkness. She stood transfixed, her heart kicking in her chest. Maybe she should wait and ask Fletcher to go up with her. It was going to be dark soon, and tomorrow, during daylight, they could go up together. Because what if she found the rats? What if one of the steps gave way and she broke her leg? What if one of the attic floorboards snapped around her ankle like a bear trap? No one would find her for days. Then she remembered telling Claude about the rats in the attic. If she went missing, he would know where to look. Besides, she couldn't wait until tomorrow. She had to know what was behind the hidden door. Curiosity killed the cat, she thought, and stepped into the dank opening. She made her way up the steep stairs, one step at a time, testing each step as she went, cobwebs clinging to her arms and face. The air was close and musty, and plaster and dried paint crunched beneath her shoes. Up she went, moving slowly and shining the flashlight on every worn rung to check for rotted or cracked wood. Halfway to the top, she felt dizzy and stopped. She put a hand on the wall to steady herself. Then she realized she was holding her breath. She inhaled deeply a few times, then moved up the staircase again. Near the top, she pointed her flashlight toward the ceiling. The circle of light revealed wood planks and rough-hewn beams soaring above her like the upside-down bowels of an old ship. The attic. Finally, she reached the top step and cast the flashlight beam around the attic, which was even bigger than she'd imagined. And on that rainy day, it was dark up there, the far reaches of the vast space hanging in shadows. The dormer windows were few and far between, encrusted up with watermarks and mold. It was so quiet, she could hear the creak and sway of the house, and the rain filtering through the leaf-choked gutters. Except for narrow walkways snaking through the cobweb and dust-covered piles of normal attic things, old trunks and dressers, mirrors and wardrobes, empty picture frames and faded portraits, china sets and books, boxes and crates, and another headless dummy, every inch of space was filled. No wonder there were rats up here. It was a rodent paradise. But how would she ever find out where they were getting in, let alone go through all of this stuff for clues about her dead sister and whatever sins her parents had been hiding? She sighed and started through a narrow walkway, testing the strength of the floor as she went. It squeaked and groaned, but seemed sound. Faded portraits and landscapes hung from rusty wires on the opposite wall at the far end of the attic. Their frames skewed this way and that. She made her way toward them. When she reached the paintings, she stopped in her tracks. there was another door in the wall, a foot up from the floor. What in the world? She said to herself. This time, though, she didn't have to search for a key. It hung from a hook next to the door frame. She unlocked the door, turned the knob, and the door creaked on its hinges and swung inward. She took a deep breath and stepped over the high threshold into another part of the attic. To her surprise, it was bare, except for an empty bookcase and two cane-back chairs. And then she saw a third door. Chapter 27. Lily. Outside Lily and Cole's sleeper car, the sun was blazing and the air was heavy. The land was flat as far as the eye could see, and the lot was covered in dry grass the color of hay. The roustabouts were raising the tent city, and the clatter of chutes, shouting, cursing, and the thunder of four-horse hitches filled the air. They were in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, and if Lily's estimates were right, it had been nearly 2 years since she and Pepper made their first appearance under the Big Top on these very grounds. After her daughter, Phoebe Lillian Holt, was born, it didn't take long for word to travel that the albino queen and her elephant were back from Europe, and the crowds entering the Big Top doubled. Mr. Barlow was happy, and so was everyone else. The money coming in was better than ever, and that made up for everything. 4 to 5 nights a week, they performed at a new spot, and for the first time ever, Lily was getting paid on a regular basis. She and Cole owned their own sleeper car, and Lily finally convinced Glory to leave Merrick for good, retire from the freak show, and take care of Phoebe when Lily and Cole were working. Now, Lily sat in the rectangle of sunlight coming in through the open window of the sleeper car and looked over at her 12-month-old daughter napping in her cushioned crib. In her deepest fears during pregnancy, Lily worried her baby would be born with some kind of abnormality, either albinism or something else. She'd been lucky enough to fall in love and get married, but would she be fortunate enough to have a normal, healthy child, too? Every day while waiting for the baby to arrive, she became more and more certain she'd only be allowed one of those things, not both. She never thought she'd be this happy, let alone content with this strange circus life that had been forced on her. Was it possible to be doubly blessed? Then Phoebe was born, with delicate blonde curls covering her little head, perfectly normal pink baby skin, and cobalt blue eyes like Cole's, shining like opals above her chubby cheeks. It felt like a miracle, almost too good to be true, and sometimes Lily woke up in the middle of the night, panicked and terrified none of it was real. After Phoebe was born, Cole bought a camera in a red case, and the walls of their car were filled with photos. Phoebe sitting on Pepper and Lily, Phoebe having her face painted by clowns, Phoebe perched on Brutus the Texas Giant's shoulders, Phoebe sunbathing on a blanket with Cole. On her first birthday, Lily made Phoebe a stuffed elephant out of yellow and pink calico print with button eyes and blue yarn for a tail. It was Phoebe's favorite toy, and now it lay beside her in her crib. Lily watched her daughter sleep, wishing she could skip this afternoon's performance. Today was going to be even hotter than yesterday, and she wanted to let Lily play in a cool bath. She didn't want to miss a second of her daughter's life, but knew she didn't have a choice. When Glory showed up to babysit in a few minutes, Lily would go to the dressing tent and get ready to perform. After all, the show must go on. Later that afternoon, while the animals and performers lined up behind the Big Top before the grand parade, the air seemed saturated with an eerie yellowish-green glow. The distant clouds grew dark, and the wind picked up. The flags fluttered, the tents rocked and rolled, and the ropes stretched left and right. The monkeys whined, and the hyenas howled, and the normally lethargic cats snarled and growled, and paced back and forth inside their dens. The horses whinnied and danced restlessly in their hitches, while the drivers held tight to their reins and tried talking them down. The handlers did their best to keep the animals under control, but it didn't help. Even Pepper couldn't stand still. Lily told her to calm down, but had to keep repositioning herself on her back every time she moved. Cole got down from Jojo, took him out of the lineup, and led him in circles to distract him. Hank tried to calm Flossie and Petunia by rubbing their legs and scratching their trunks. It was normal for the animals to get restless during bad weather, but Lily had never seen them act like this.
"What do you think has them riled up?"
she asked Hank.
"They sense a storm coming," he said. "Hearing them snarl and whine and bellow makes you feel kind of funny in the pit of the stomach, don't it?"
She nodded.
"You mean a thunderstorm?"
He scanned the horizon.
"At least that. But it smells like tornado weather to me."
Lily drew in a sharp breath.
"Do you really think it'll get that bad?"
"More than likely. When I first started out with a show in Hutchinson, Kansas, a twister just missed us. I will never forget the way that air smelled. We didn't have much warning, but we all saw the black-green cloud with its trailing funnel coming at us."
"What did you do?"
"The roustabouts got busy grouping the loose equipment and lashing everything together with ropes and chains. We covered the animal wagons and dropped all canvas flat to the ground, striking all poles. A few seconds later, the twister was upon us, cutting a swath right through the center of the lot. We were lucky, though, because nobody got hurt and we didn't lose anything."
Lily gripped Pepper's headpiece tighter.
"Maybe I should go back to the car and check on Phoebe," she said.
"She'll be all right," he said. "If there's a storm, she's safer on the train than we are out here."
Lily pressed her lips together and looked at the sky, worry knotting her gut. Mr. Barlow appeared and walked up and down the line, shouting orders, his face dark and brooding. One of the lions reached through his cage and swatted at him with a clawed mitt. Mr. Barlow turned, outraged, and dragged his riding crop along the bars. The lion snarled and reached for him again. Mr. Barlow cussed and gave the cage another whack, then marched into the big top. Cole brought Jojo back into line and climbed on.
"Your father thinks there might be a tornado," Lily said to him.
Concern lined Cole's face, but before he could respond, Mr. Barlow's whistle sounded inside the tent, and the parade began. While the band played the grand march, the big top leaned and twisted, the great canvas ceiling and walls billowing up and down and side to side like a giant handkerchief. The majority of the rubes were oblivious, applauding and spellbound by the clowns and zebras and elephants circling the hippodrome, but some looked up and frowned. When Pepper and Lily reached the halfway point on the other side of the hippodrome, a smattering of heavy raindrops drummed on the tent ceiling. At first, the sound was barely audible above the music, but then it began pouring. Sheets of rain beat on the canvas like 100 galloping hooves. The light outside the entrance turned leaden, and the canvas ceiling grew dark. Lily glanced at Cole, struggling to push down the panic rising in her chest. He nodded once, as if to tell her everything was okay, and she forced herself to keep smiling and waving. Then she saw something move near the bell rings, and her heart stopped. Three birds had flown into the tent, and now they circled the center poles, frantically darting back and forth, searching for a way out. A bird in the big top meant death for a performer, and there were three of them. Lily's smile faltered, and she checked to see if anyone else had noticed. One of the female trapeze artists was staring up at the dreaded flying omens, along with a lion tamer and three tightrope walkers, all with ashen faces. Nerves prickled along Lily's skin, and it was all she could do to keep her arm in the air. She glanced at Cole again and said his name. He didn't hear her. Just then, lightning flashed outside the main entrance and lit up the canvas roof. A deafening clap of thunder startled the horses, then rolled over and over on top itself until it felt like the entire earth was shaking. Lightning flickered again and again and again, and the musicians lost their tempo. Near the pit, Mr. Barlow motioned frantically for the band to keep playing, then raised his arm and moved his hand in small circles to signal the performers and animals to keep moving. The audience looked at one another with worried faces. After a long, tense minute, lightning flashed again, this time not as brightly, and the following thunder sounded farther away. The band picked up the tempo, and a collective feeling of relief seemed to fill the tent. The clowns waved to the kiddies, the acrobats tumbled and pranced in the parade, and the candy butchers sold peanuts and cotton candy up and down the bleachers. Lily took a deep breath and relaxed a little. It seemed like the storm was moving away. Then a great gust of wind hit the big top, and the entire tent leaned to one side like a ship rolling on rough seas. Lily grabbed Pepper's headpiece with both hands, and Cole's face went dark. Women shrieked and gaped up at the ceiling with open mouths. Children started to cry, and several of the horses reared, their nostrils flaring, their eyes spinning with terror. The wagon drivers yanked back on the horses' reins, and the performers and clowns slowed and stopped. Section by section, the parade came to a lurching halt. Two zebras pulled away from their handlers and ran across the center ring toward the exit, with several clowns giving chase. The ballet girls ducked for cover beneath the animal wagons, ignoring the driver's warnings that it wasn't safe. Every instinct screamed at Lily to get out of there, but there was nowhere to run. She and Cole and the elephants were stopped in the middle of the tent, sandwiched between the big cat wagons and the camels, halfway between any possible exits. The only possible escape would involve plowing through the center rings and yelling at everyone to get out of the way. In what seemed like slow motion, the big top shifted and fell back into place, and for a second she loosened her grip on Pepper's headpiece. They were going to be all right. Then a sidewall suddenly lifted from the ground, and the ceiling began folding in on itself. The canvas tugging and creasing and ripping. The trapeze artist's ladder shuddered and twisted. Poles pulled out of the dirt, and ropes vibrated and snapped. "Tornado!" a man yelled. The crowd jumped to their feet and fought to get down from the bleachers in one giant swell, dropping popcorn boxes and cotton candy, yelling and pushing and shoving one another out of the way. Parents grabbed children's hands and glanced up at the ceiling with panic-filled eyes, trying to watch their step at the same time. An old woman fell halfway down, and her husband helped her up, struggling to keep his balance while being crowded from behind. Two boys jumped from the sides of the bleachers and dropped to the ground below. Several others followed suit. One woman tumbled and fell off the side, lay there for a moment, then got up and limped as fast as she could toward the exit. Mr. Barlow ran into the center ring, red-faced and yelling, arms flapping as he ordered everyone to get the animals and wagons out of the tent. Hank and the other handlers rushed in with hooks and lead lines, and the wagon drivers turned the horses toward the back exit. The roustabout scurried around, gathering all movable equipment and gear, trying to lash everything together with ropes and chains. "Get out of here!" Cole shouted at Lily. "I'll be right behind you!" He didn't need to tell her twice. She steered Pepper around a wagon toward the back exit, the coppery tang of fear in her throat. The rest of the performers headed that way too, and the escape route became an obstacle course full of camels and horses and giraffes and workers and clowns and acrobats and women in tutus. Lily and Pepper started and stopped what seemed like 100 times, trying not to step on anyone. Then the back wall of the tent collapsed, and poles and ropes and great swaths of canvas fell sideways. covering the musicians and part of the bleachers still filled with panicked circus-goers. The band screeched to a halt with a clang of a cymbal and a squawk of a clarinet. The center poles of the big top leaned left and right, and the attached ropes stretched and pulled and snapped. Loud vibrating pings and ripping sounds filled the air as the ceiling creaked and shifted above their heads, and several of the bale rings tore from the canvas. Terror flooded the tent like a living, breathing thing. With the back access damaged and the ceiling falling in, the only way out was through the main entrance. Everyone stampeded toward it. The tent exploded with screams and shouts, the sounds of bodies shoving past bodies, and people running off bleachers and stands. Broken ropes whipped in the air like frenzied snakes, and wooden poles and ladders splintered and crashed. Lily turned Pepper around and urged her toward the entrance, then glanced over her shoulder to make sure Cole and the other elephants were following. They were farther back, trying to make their way through the chaotic throng of animals and people. When Lily faced forward again, Mr. Barlow was blocking her way, a bullhook in his hands. Pepper stopped in her tracks and trumpeted loudly.
"What are you doing?" Lily yelled. "Get out of the way!"
"You can't take her out there," Mr. Barlow shouted.
"Are you out of your mind? We've got to get out of here!"
Lily urged Pepper forward, but Mr. Barlow refused to let her pass, barring her way at every turn. Pepper trumpeted and reared, but not enough to make Lily fall off. Mr. Barlow raised the bullhook, his face threatening.
"She's not leaving this tent!"
Terror and confusion twisted in Lily's chest. Why was Mr. Barlow trying to stop Pepper from getting to safety? It didn't make sense. Pepper was his biggest draw and worth a lot of money. All around them, handlers and animals and rubes and performers stampeded out of the tent. A blur of human limbs, furry heads, tails and hoofed feet. Llamas and horses and poodles and people zigzagged and bolted and jumped over one another, screaming and galloping and trying to escape. Women fell and shrieked. Children stumbled and vanished, and parents yanked them up to carry them, flailing and crying out of the big top. If Lily had to force Pepper to trample Mr. Barlow into the ground to escape, she was getting them out of there alive. She urged Pepper forward, but Pepper refused to run him over. Mr. Barlow raised the bullhook and struck Pepper in the chest, grunting with the effort. Pepper cried out in pain, and Lily shrieked in anger. She swung her leg over Pepper's head and put her feet together, ready to slide down Pepper's side and wrestle the bullhook away from Mr. Barlow. But before she could, Cole stopped Jojo beside them and told her to stay put. He jumped down from Jojo and grabbed the bullhook with both hands, his face contorted with fury. Mr. Barlow held on, and they grappled with it above their heads, grimacing and pushing each other back and forth.
"Go on!" Cole shouted at Lily. "Take Jojo and get out of here!"
Lily urged Pepper toward the exit, trying not to trample anyone, and yelled for Jojo to come too. When she glanced over her shoulder, she saw Cole yank the bullhook from Mr. Barlow's grip and throw it over the bleachers. But Jojo refused to leave Cole, no matter how many terrified animals and panicked rubes bumped into him, or how many times Lily called his name. When she neared the exit, she looked back one more time. A draft horse knocked Mr. Barlow off his feet, and Cole climbed back on Jojo. She watched for as long as she could, then leaned forward and flattened her body close to Pepper's head, so the low door frame wouldn't knock her off. At last, they were out of the big top. Praying Phoebe was safe in the train, and Cole and the rest of the elephants were behind her, she steered Pepper toward the other side of the midway. Wind and rain shrieked all around, beating against her skin like bullets, and the sounds of ripping canvas, snapping wood, and screaming people filled the air. She squinted against the rain and looked back at the big top, just as the colossal tent lifted off the ground, the canvas twisting and turning like rags inside a washer. The last of the rubes scurried out of the rising entrance and ran left and right, their hands on their heads, their faces knotted with terror. Ropes and stakes pulled out of the dirt, and the wind tore the roof apart seam by seam, leaving the poles and rigging suspended in the air like a giant black web. The sidewalls were torn to shreds. Then the entire tent rose in the air and suddenly vanished, as if plucked from the earth by a giant hand. Several hundred yards away, a black rotating funnel roared toward them, wood and trees and dirt swirling around it like twigs and grass being sucked into a whirlpool. Horror filled Lily's mind, but she couldn't pull her eyes away. She felt the rumbling growl of the approaching twister in her stomach, and the wet, green, musky smell of dirt and vegetation filled her nostrils. "This is it," she thought. "I knew happiness was too good to last. I'm sorry, Phoebe. I hope you never forget how much I love you." Then, as suddenly as it appeared, the funnel lifted off the earth and got smaller and smaller and higher, hanging from the sky like an elephant's trunk before disappearing into a churning black cloud. When it was over, Lily let out her breath and fell forward on Pepper, limp with relief. Cole and Jojo stopped beside her. "Are you all right?" She pushed herself up and nodded, too shaken to speak. Within minutes, the wind died down and a yellow shaft of sunlight peeked over the horizon, as if God had flicked on a giant switch. Everyone stopped running and looked around with dazed, exhausted expressions, surveying the damage or searching for loved ones in the crowd. Some stood rooted to one spot, mumbling and staring, rivulets of blood running in their hair or down their arms and legs, their clothes ripped and torn. Shoeless children wandered aimlessly, crying and calling for their parents. Debris littered the lot, popcorn boxes and ripped flags, soaked streamers and torn posters, soggy stuffed animals and overturned ticket booths, wet straw, boards, and rope. The freak show banners had been torn from their moorings and now hung from their corners, sagging like giant tablecloths across puddles of mud. Dolly, the world's most beautiful fat woman, Mabel, the four-legged woman, and Penelope, the singing midget, came out of the freak show tent, eyes wide, mouths gaping. Behind the big top area, the back lot had been stripped clean. The menagerie tent was gone, along with several animal cages and wagons. The ground was strewn with straw and shovels and rope and wood and bent metal. The rubes and performers and handlers and roustabouts viewed the wreckage in shocked silence, amazed and stunned and relieved to be alive. Mr. Barlow stormed through the middle of it all and made his way toward Lily and Pepper, limping and wet, one sleeve torn from his red jacket. He gestured furiously, waving her away and yelling at her to get Pepper out of there. Lily didn't understand why he was so angry. She had saved Pepper's life. Then, for the first time since escaping the big top, she looked down at the bowl. At first, she couldn't comprehend what she was seeing. Then she realized why Mr. Barlow didn't want Pepper to leave the big top, and renewed dread filled her chest. Wet paint ran off Pepper's head and back, trickling down her sides in white streams, her gray skin showing through in mottled blotches.
"Let's go," Lily said to Pepper and Cole. "We have to get out of here."
But before they could turn and leave, a boy pointed at Pepper and shouted,
"The albino elephant is fake!"
Several other rubes noticed and stared, slack-jawed.
"The damn thing is covered in paint!" another voice called out.
Mr. Barlow turned to face the rubes and held up his hands. "Hold on now," he said. "I can assure you the albino elephant is real.
The white paint only enhanced the natural paleness of her skin.
Several men marched toward him, their hands and fists, their faces contorted in anger. Lily turned Pepper away and steered her toward the train, trying to remind herself that she and Cole had just missed being killed by a tornado, and how lucky they were to be able to go home to their daughter. Right now, that was all that mattered. But another storm was brewing in the distance, and this time, she didn't know if she'd be safe. It took a full day to clean up after the tornado ripped the Barlow brothers' big top from the earth, during which time the local police had to keep the rubes off the lot. Word had spread like wildfire that the albino elephant was fake and the locals wanted their money back. And after so many had nearly lost their lives during the tornado, they weren't above using their fists to get it. It took another half day for Mr. Barlow and Merrick to convince the sheriff that the Barlow Brothers Circus wouldn't be back. In the meantime, rumors spread among the performers, freaks, trainers, and roustabouts that the Barlow Brothers Circus was finished. Between the exposure of the fake albino elephant and the loss of the Big Top and Menagerie tent, there was no way Mr. Barlow could recoup and reopen. Not this season, anyway. They were all out. All over. The blowdown had done them in. When the circus train finally pulled out of town the next day, it traveled all night and half the day without stopping. No one knew where it was headed, and no one dared ask. If the Barlow Brothers Circus showed up at the previous scheduled stops without the albino princess and the albino elephant featured on the advance posters put up by the 24-hour man, it would be a disaster. When the train finally stopped, word spread throughout the cars that they were at a new spot on a rail lot outside of Nashville, Tennessee. Supposedly, Mr. Barlow had arranged for a new Big Top to be set up, and when the performers and workers looked out the train windows, they were relieved and surprised to see the flying squadron there. The cookhouse was up, the canvas man was laying out the lot, and hundreds of men were lugging rigging and pounding in stakes. The sideshow and dressing tents had been erected too, but patches of long grass and two rusty barrels occupied the center of the lot, where the Big Top should have been spread out, waiting to be raised. After everyone was done with breakfast and the cookhouse had closed until lunch, the performers went back to the train to wait and see what happened next. A short time later, another train rolled in on a sideline between them and the train depot. When Lily and Cole saw the other train pulling in next to their car, they got up from playing on the floor with Phoebe and looked out the window. It was the Rowe and Company Circus. They glanced at each other with alarm. Two circuses showing up on the same lot could only mean trouble. "What do you think is going on?" Lily said. "I hate to say it," Cole said, "but they might be here to pick through our pieces." "What does that mean?" "Either we're shutting down after this spot and Mr. Barlow is selling off what he can to save himself, or..." A knock on the door interrupted Cole mid-sentence. He left the window and went over to answer it. Hank entered, his face grim. "Mr. Barlow wants the elephants off the train," he said.
"Why?"
Cole said.
"He has a buyer."
A hard knot twisted in Lily's chest. "No, not the elephants."
"Come give me a hand," Hank said, "and keep your mouth shut."
Lily pulled on her shoes and scooped Phoebe off the floor, where she'd been playing with her favorite doll and calico elephant. Phoebe started crying and reached for her toys. Lily grabbed the elephant, gave it to her, and started toward the door, panic rising like a flood in her chest. Phoebe hugged the elephant beneath her chin and grinned, oblivious to her mother's distress.
"Stay here," Cole said to Lily.
"I'll do no such thing," Lily said.
"I'm taking the baby over to Glory and coming with you."
Cole studied her face, then went with his father out the door. There was nothing he could do to stop her, and he knew it. She followed him outside, then hurried along the train in the other direction until she reached the car Glory shared with Ruby, Rosie, and three other sideshow performers. Glory and Ruby sat in folding lawn chairs next to the tracks, smoking and soaking up the sun. Sweating and out of breath, Lily stopped and put Phoebe in Glory's lap. "Can you watch her for a little while?" Glory nodded and held on to Phoebe, confusion wrinkling her brow.
"Sure," she said. "But what's going on? Everything okay?"
"No," Lily said. "Everything's not okay. Mr. Barlow has a buyer for the elephants."
The words caught in her throat.
"Oh my God," Glory said. "All of them?"
"I don't know," Lily said, her chin quivering. "But I need to find out."
"Do whatever you need to do. I'll take care of Phoebe."
"Thanks," Lily said.
She kissed her daughter on the head, whispered she'd be back soon, and hurried away. By the time she got to the stock cars, a crowd of performers and roustabouts was already forming. She pushed her way through the gathering to see what was happening. The equestrian director and several handlers had lined the horses up next to the train, and Cole, Hank, and two handlers brought the elephants down the ramps, led them over to the row of horses, then stood holding their leg chains. Two men in suits and shiny shoes walked up and down the line, inspecting the stock. One tall and thin, with dark hair and a walrus mustache, the other with a bald head and silver cane. Mr. Barlow and Merrick handed out hearty handshakes and strolled beside them, smiling. The local sheriff and the railroad officials were there, too, along with a bunch of townies gawking from the other side of the tracks. One of the acrobats asked the head of the Flying Zoppe brothers if he thought they were shutting down. The Flying Zoppe brothers shook his head. "Mr. Barlow's selling off ring stock to pay for a new big top." Shaking and nauseous, Lily hurried over to the elephants and came to a stop next to Merrick and Mr. Barlow. Cole frowned at her and shook his head, cautioning her to keep quiet.
"You can't sell the bulls," she said to Mr. Barlow. "They're your biggest draw."
Mr. Barlow ignored her and kept smiling and nodding at the men in suits, who were inspecting the elephants up close.
"Mind your own business," Merrick said to her under his breath.
"They are my business," she said. "If they go to another circus, Cole and I go with them."
"He's only selling one," Merrick said.
The bald man pointed at Jojo with his cane.
"We'll take the young one," he said.
Lily went rigid.
"No, not Jojo. It will break Pepper's heart."
"Sold," Mr. Barlow said. "You've made a fine choice, gentlemen. He's one of the smartest bulls we've ever had."
"That's not true," Lily said in a loud voice. "He's been in the parade, but he's as dumb as they come. We can't teach him anything."
Mr. Barlow glared at her, and Cole gave her a stern look.
"And you are..."
the man with a walrus mustache asked Lily.
"I work with these elephants," she said. "I'm sure you've heard of the albino princess and her albino elephant."
The bald man knitted his brow and regarded Mr. Barlow.
"You better not be trying to pull a fast one on us," he said.
"Of course not," Mr. Barlow said.
"And to prove I'm an honest businessman, if this bull turns out to be a dud, I'll take him back and give you two others to replace him."
The bald man smiled and shook Mr. Barlow's hand.
"It's a deal."
"You're making a mistake," Lily said,
trying to keep her voice even.
"Jojo won't mind anyone but me and my husband, and even then, he's the most stubborn bull I've ever seen."
"Don't listen to her," Mr. Barlow said. "She's just a bleeding heart who's too attached to the stock. She'd make a fuss no matter who I sold."
He motioned his strongmen to move her away from him. The strongmen grabbed Lily, dragged her over with the rest of the spectators, and held her there. She struggled to get free, tears blurring her vision.
"You can't take Jojo away from his mother," she shouted. "You just can't."
The man with the walrus mustache ordered his handlers to take Jojo and load him on their train. And the bald man counted out a stack of bills into Mr. Barlow's hand. His silver-tipped cane held beneath his arm. One of the Rowe and Company handlers took Jojo's front leg chain from Cole, yanking on it to get him moving. When Jojo refused, another man jabbed a bull hook into his shoulder.
"Hey!" Cole shouted. "There's no need for that!"
The man ignored him and jabbed Jojo harder. Jojo curled his trunk and bellowed in pain, then started walking. Following the handlers along the train in fits and starts, he stopped every few steps and glanced back at his mother. Every time he came to a halt, the handler jabbed him in the shoulder to get him moving again. Mr. Barlow, Merrick, the sheriff, and the railroad officials followed, talking and oblivious to the drama that was unfolding. Breathing hard, Lily pushed her elbows into her sides, the world a blur through her tears. It was all she could do not to scream. There was no way to stop what was happening. Pepper trumpeted and called out to her son, lifting her front feet one at a time and getting more and more agitated. Cole talked to her and rubbed her legs and shoulders, trying to get her to calm down, but it was no use. Pepper knew her baby was being taken away. When the handler steered Jojo around the caboose and out of sight, Pepper broke free and charged forward, ripping her leg chain from Cole's hands. Cole raced after her, but Pepper was running at full bore, a cloud of dust rising at her heels. It seemed like the entire earth quaked beneath her massive feet. The strongman let Lily go, and she and the other Barlow Brothers handlers gave chase. By the time Lily and the handlers reached the other side of the caboose, the Rowe and Company men were already trying to load Jojo on their train, shouting and cussing and jabbing him with bull hooks to move him up the ramp. Mr. Barlow, Merrick, the sheriff, and the railroad officials stood nearby and watched, indifferent. Pepper stampeded toward the train, with her trunk held high, moving faster than Lily thought possible. Cole couldn't keep up. A collective gasp erupted from the townies gathered near the tracks, and they moved back, eyes wide. Jojo stopped halfway up the ramp, looked back at his mother, and trumpeted loudly. When Merrick saw Pepper running toward them, he took a cattle prod from one of the handlers and pushed it into Jojo's back leg. Jojo bellowed in pain and moved up the ramp. Merrick made a move to hit Jojo with the cattle prod again, but before he could, Pepper reached him and knocked him to the ground with her trunk. A woman screamed, and someone shouted for everyone to run. The Rowe and Company handlers kept their eyes on Pepper, but continued to force Jojo into the boxcar, striking him faster and harder with every panicked blow. Pepper roared and sideswiped the handlers off the ramp, her trunk swinging like a baseball bat. The men fell in the dirt, scrambled to their feet, and moved away.
"Pepper, no!"
Lily shouted, still running toward her. Cole stopped and grabbed her by the arm.
"There's nothing you can do."
Lily watched helplessly beside Cole, one trembling hand over her mouth.
"Please, Pepper, don't hurt them. They don't understand."
One of the Rowe and Company handlers picked up a bull hook, wielded it like a sword, and moved toward Pepper. She growled and charged at him, then stopped, her head held high as if daring him to come closer. He dropped the bull hook and retreated, his face suddenly drained of color. Pepper turned away, gently guided Jojo down the ramp with her trunk, and stepped backward to give him room to turn around. Behind Pepper, Merrick got off the ground, picked up a bull hook with both hands and swung it at her back leg, puncturing her thigh. He yanked it out and her skin ripped open. Pepper's head jerked up and she bellowed in pain. Merrick hammered the bull hook into her hide again and again and again, until blood gushed from the wounds and ran down her leg. Pepper spun around and swatted him to the ground with her trunk. He landed on his side and lay there crumpled and moaning, then turned over on his back. Pepper lowered her head and charged him. Merrick's eyes went wide with terror, and he crawled backward in the dirt, trying to get away. Pepper reached him before he could get up and whacked him sideways with one foot.
He rolled away in the dust, and she followed, batting him back and forth with her front feet, her leg chain swinging through the air like a whip. Merrick screamed and begged for help, lifting his arms to protect himself, the wet crack of his breaking bones like snapping sticks. The townies recoiled in horror and scrambled away. Women shrieked, and the Rowan Company handlers ran for safety.
"Pepper, stop!" Lily cried.
She started toward her again, but Cole held her back.
"Let me go! I have to stop her! She'll listen to me!"
"You don't know that," Cole said. "There's no telling what she'll do right now, even to you, not when she's protecting JoJo."
"Pepper, please!" she shouted. "Don't!"
She gave in and sank to her knees, her gorge rising in her throat. Cole was right. There was no stopping Pepper now. It was a mother's instinct to protect her young, no matter what it took. And Lily would have done the same thing if someone tried to take Phoebe. But Pepper was an animal, and she would be punished. A few seconds later, Merrick stopped screaming. Blood covered one side of his face, and his head, arms, and legs flopped around like a rag doll. Pepper continued to bat him back and forth with her feet and trunk, tossing him around like a cat playing with a dead mouse. Gasps of horror rose from the crowd, and a woman fainted. Cole knelt beside Lily, and she buried her face in his shoulder. She couldn't watch. Not because of what was happening to Merrick, but because she knew what Mr. Barlow and the others would do to Pepper for acting like a mother and an elephant. Then a shot rang out, and Lily looked up. The sheriff was pointing a rifle at Pepper. Pepper took a step backward, away from Merrick, blood running from her shoulder. The sheriff fired three more times, and bullets hit Pepper in the back and thigh. Pepper lifted her head and roared in agony, then turned, stumbled, and listed slightly to one side. The handlers slowly moved toward her with bullhooks and cattle prods, arms out, ready to run if she turned on them. Merrick lay still as a stone on the ground, his arms and legs twisted at odd angles, his head surrounded by a growing puddle of blood. Lily got to her feet and raced toward Pepper.
"Stay away from her!"
she shouted. The handler stopped and watched with wary eyes. When she got closer to Pepper, Lily slowed and put out a hand.
"It's all right. Calm down, girl. You're okay."
Pepper's sad amber eyes sought Lily's, her impossibly long lashes splattered with droplets of blood. She sighed, a low rattling sound that was more of a moan, reached for Lily's hand with her trunk, and pulled her closer. Lily choked back a sob and leaned against Pepper, unable to speak around the burning lump in her throat. With a grave look on his face, Cole came over and picked up Pepper's leg chain. Behind her, the Rowan Company handlers quickly prodded JoJo back up the ramp and into the boxcar, jabbing the cattle prod into his neck every time he tried to glance back at his mother.
"Chain that goddamn bull down," Mr. Barlow ordered his handlers.
"Kill it,"
one of the townies shouted.
"Kill it,"
someone else yelled.
"Kill the elephant."
Other voices joined in.
"Kill the elephant! Kill the elephant!"
Lily shook her head, the world a blur through her tears.
"No, no, no," her mind screamed. "This can't be happening. It just can't."
She took a few steps away from Pepper, toward the Barlow brothers' train.
"Come,"
she managed. Pepper stood, rooted to the ground, head hanging.
"Please, Pepper, you've got to follow me."
Cole gave her leg chain a gentle tug.
"Come on, girl," he said. "It's time to go."
The sheriff approached with his rifle, his finger on the trigger, ready to shoot again. Mr. Barlow followed, his sweat-covered face pale, motioning his handlers forward. The walrus mustache man from Rowan Company drew a pistol from the waist of his suit and moved toward Pepper, his mouth hard. Lily turned toward them and held out her arms.
"Please," she said, choking back tears. "Don't shoot her. She was just trying to protect her baby."
You can't punish a mother for acting like a mother or an animal for acting like an animal.
Cole moved between Lily and the men.
Let us take her back to the train, he said. She's not going to hurt anyone else.
The hell she won't, the sheriff said.
Listen, Cole said. I've worked with this bull my entire life. She doesn't have a mean bone in her body.
She's got the taste of blood now, one of the railroad officials said. She's a murderer.
That's right,
the sheriff said. Just then, Victor stormed around the caboose of the Barlow brothers' train. The townies gasped and looked at one another with confusion and fear. Some moved farther away. Victor hurried over to Merrick's lifeless body and dropped to his knees, his giant shoulders slumped. He put a hand on Merrick's neck to feel for a pulse, listened to his chest, then threw back his head and howled, a low, guttural, awful-sounding cry that tore from his throat. Everyone froze, their mouths and eyes wide with shock. Several women held trembling fingers over their lips and started to cry, while others twisted their faces in disgust. The mournful sound pierced Lily's soul, and she nearly cried out too, devastated for Jojo and Pepper. When it was over, Victor staggered upright, scooped Merrick's broken, bloody body into his muscular arms, and trudged back to the Barlow brothers' train.
"What the hell was that?" the sheriff said.
"Never mind that freak," the mustached man from Rowe and Company said. "What are we doing about this damn bull?"
The men retrained their guns on Pepper.
"Now listen, boys," Mr. Barlow said. "You can't just kill a $20,000 elephant. If this bull needs to be shot, I'll be the one to do it. If nothing else, she'll keep my big cats fed for a week."
He jerked his chin at Cole. "Put her back on the train."
"Now hold on," the sheriff said. "That elephant's gone rogue. You can't put it back in the circus."
"For Christ's sake, I'm not an idiot," Mr. Barlow said. "From here on out, that bull will be raising tents and hauling equipment. If she acts up, I'll put her down. My bull, my problem. Unless whoever finishes her off wants to pay me what she's worth."
Reluctantly, the men lowered their guns. Lily's shoulder sagged in relief.
"Come on, girl," she said to Pepper. "Let's go."
Cole tugged on Pepper's leg chain again, and after what seemed like forever, she took a tentative step forward, then another. The sheriff and handlers moved back to give her room, still on high alert. Lily walked backward beside Cole and urged Pepper to follow them toward the Barlow brothers' train. Pepper took half a dozen more steps, then stopped and glanced back at Jojo, standing in the open door of the stock car, his legs in chains. Lily called Pepper's name, pleading with her to keep moving forward, and after a few seconds, she did as she was told. The sheriff and the Rowan Company men followed, guns at the ready. When they reached the Barlow brothers' caboose, Pepper stopped and looked back at Jojo again. Tear tracks stained her cheeks. Jojo raised his trunk and bellowed.
"Shut that bloody door!"
the bald man from Rowan Company shouted. The handler shoved Jojo backward into the car and pushed the door across its railings, slamming it shut with a final thud. Pepper flattened her ears and hung her head. Lily could barely see through her tears.
"Come on, Pepper," she managed. "Come with me, sweet girl."
Pepper moaned, long and low, and trudged on, her wide feet dragging in the dust. Streaks of blood ran down her legs like circus stripes. By the time Cole, Lily, and Pepper made their way to the other side of the Barlow brothers' train, Flossie and Petunia, along with the horses, had been reloaded. Victor had disappeared with Merrick's body, and Glory was making her way toward them with Phoebe in her arms, her brow furrowed. When they reached each other, Lily took Phoebe and hugged Glory hard. Cole stopped to kiss his daughter. Behind them, Pepper stopped too. Lily's throat and nose were so swollen from crying she could hardly breathe. She drew away from Glory's embrace and searched her face.
I'm sorry about Merrick, she managed.
Me too,
Cole said. It's all right, Glory said. She ran a hand under her nose. From what I heard, the bastard had it coming. Lily didn't know what to say. Glory was right. Merrick had finally paid the ultimate price for being so cruel, but she would never say that out loud. Because even after Glory moved out of Merrick's car, she still cared about him. Whether it was blind love or gratitude for saving Victor, Lily had no idea. But she had to respect Glory's feelings, no matter how misguided she thought they were.
I'm sorry about JoJo, Glory said, and Pepper.
Lily nodded, gave her another hug, and they started walking again. Pepper followed, lost in her misery. Lily clasped Phoebe to her chest and kissed her soft forehead, her endless tears falling on her daughter's blonde curls. Phoebe peeked over Lily's shoulder and pointed at Pepper with a drool-covered finger.
Peppa!
She said in a high, excited voice. She giggled and gazed at Lily with bright, happy eyes. Lily tried to smile.
That's right, baby girl. That's Pepper.
Why don't you take Phoebe back to our car? Cole said. I can load Pepper. Glory held out her arms.
Here, she said to Lily. I'll take her. You go with Pepper. She needs you.
Are you sure? Lily said. Of course, Glory said. Take as long as you need. Our little princess will be fine. Lily kissed Phoebe again and handed her to Glory.
Thank you.
No problem, Glory said. She hugged Lily again, then took Phoebe back to her car. The rest of the Barlow Brothers performers and workers gathered along the tracks to watch Pepper return. Dolly, the world's most beautiful fat woman, wept uncontrollably, while Ruby and Rosie patted her wide shoulders, tears running down their rouged faces. The Flying Zoppé brothers stood with the Bally girls and Mrs. Benigni, all with somber faces. With a quivering chin, Natasha, the trapeze artist, held tight to Chloe, the tightrope walker's hand. Aldo, the alligator man, wiped Dina, the living half-girl's cheeks, and the midgets, Penelope and Pierre, had their arms around each other. There wasn't a dry eye in the lineup. When Lily and Cole loaded Pepper onto the train, Flossie and Petunia reached out to her with their trunks, swaying and making low moaning noises. Pepper stopped briefly in front of JoJo's empty spot, her ears and trunk drooping, then made her way into her own. She went down on her knees in the straw and lay on her side, her eyes wet, her face streaked with tears. Cole fastened her leg chain to the wall, and Lily sat beside her, caressing her wrinkled cheek. Hank came into the stock car and knelt down to examine Pepper.
Is she gonna be all right? Lily said.
I think so, Hank said. If the bullets had hit anything vital, she'd be down by now. Lily got to her feet and kissed Pepper's forehead.
I'll be right back, she whispered. Just hold on, girl.
She went with Cole over to the open stock car door. Everyone looked up at them expectantly.
She's restrained,
Cole said to Mr. Barlow and the sheriff.
Good, the sheriff said. Now, you'd best pack up and leave. We don't need no murdering elephant around these parts. Now hold on, Mr. Barlow said. This is an important stop for us, and we're scheduled for 3 shows. We're just picking up after nearly losing everything in a tornado, and on top of that, I lost my longtime business partner and the owner of the sideshow.
He lowered his head and pinched the bridge of his nose as if struggling to hold himself together. After a long moment, he took a deep breath, sighed long and loud, and looked up.
If we don't do tomorrow's show, it could mean ruin. You're not gonna kick a hard-working man when he's down, are you?
He clapped the sheriff on the shoulder.
These are hard times, my friend.
You're right, these are hard times, the sheriff said. And I was hired to keep the people in this county safe. I'm not gonna lose my job over a damn elephant.
Mr. Barlow nodded as if he understood, then reached into his pocket, pulled out a money clip, and started counting out a stack of bills.
That bowl won't appear in any of my shows, he said. You have my word.
The sheriff scowled.
Are you trying to bribe me, Mr. Barlow? Just want to say thank you for your service here today.